Often one of the qualities that people admire most in others is a single-minded purpose, where they single-mindedly go after a goal and are willing to sacrifice almost anything to reach that goal. And of course, that can be a very good thing when the goal is noble, when the goal is something that will benefit many, when the goal will do something great among the community, but can also be harmful when the goal is something that only fills the ego or enriches my bank account at the expense of others. And in the same way, the sacrifices can be good and bad. The sacrifices of giving of your time and your talents and your treasures in the search of a goal is something that is laudable at times, but also can become harmful when it begins to sacrifice relationships at the expense of things and objects, when it begins to use others as a means to get something rather than to work with others in the creation of the goal. Both our first reading and our second reading, or in our gospel, tonight, talk about being single-minded in purpose. The scholar comes to Jesus tonight, and he says to him, "What must I do to get to heaven?" Right, that's what he's saying. What is the greatest of the commandments is, what must I do to get to heaven? I want to be single-minded in purpose. And Jesus gives him the great shema: you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul, with all your strength, with every fiber of your being. And if you do that, then you will love your neighbor as yourself. And if you do that, then you are not far from the kingdom of heaven. In other words, are we single-minded in that goal of heaven? Because if we are, then we begin to live differently, we begin to act differently, we begin to pray differently, we begin to share who we are differently with others. Because being single-minded in that goal isn't to exclude others, but to include others, to join together, to bring about a place of love, a place of blessing, a place of holiness, a place of healing, a place of mercy, a place of compassion. To be single-minded in our purpose is to be single-minded in following who God calls us to be. To be single-minded in who God desires us to be and has made us to be. And that goal is the search for that. We all know our destination, which is heaven. We all know the road which we are to follow. It is Jesus Christ. But in following that road, we discover a greater, richer love of who we are called to be, how we are called to live our lives, and how we are called to share our lives. That is what we are called to do. And this isn't something new, because one of the great complaints that God has against the people of Israel, one of the great complaints that Jesus has about the scribes, the Pharisees, the people in power at his time, one of the great complaints that the new church had was that not being single in purpose, to be wishy-washy, to say, what if, but, I don't, I can't, I won't, I will, I've got to do all those things that distract us from being single-purposed, where we put up fake roadblocks or roadblocks of our own imagination, our own making, rather than trusting that God will help us overcome whatever is in front of us, that God will help us to overcome any obstacle in our life if we choose to follow him. Because sometimes those obstacles lead us in a direction that we may not have wanted to go. but it's a place where we find the happiness and the peace and the joy where God desires us to be. Sometimes the sufferings in life aren't what we would like to have, but they help us to enter in a more richer and fuller relationship with others around us as they draw forth our compassion and the compassion of others. To be all in with God is to place ourselves in His hands, trusting in His love for us. And we all know how difficult that is, as we oftentimes are betrayed by the trust of love of people in our lives. And yet we continually place ourselves in God's hands, in God's mercy, in God's compassion, in God's love, so that we might reach out in those same wonderful gifts that God shares with us. Because we believe, as Jesus has said, that we are truly brothers and sisters in Christ. That we're truly His brothers and sisters. In that famous line, He looks at His disciples and says to us, I no longer call you servants, but I call you friends. Because if you are a servant, then I choose you. But if you are my friend, then you have chosen me. That is what Jesus is reminding us. That God calls us to be His friends. That Jesus calls us to be His friends because He desires that we choose Him and Him alone. To follow, to be with, and to enrich our lives in the wonderful blessing that He promises to us if we simply follow Him. And so if we truly believe that we are brothers and sisters in Christ, and we truly believe that we are united as one, that we share a common purpose, a singular purpose. Someone once said, why do we have a church? Well, the church has only one purpose. It's the salvation of souls. Now, we do that imperfectly often because I am imperfect and each of us is imperfect. But it is what God has called us to do, to work for the salvation of souls. And the salvation of souls is when we recognize that we are brothers and sisters in Christ. And if we are brothers and sisters in Christ, we have to know each other. We can't be strangers sitting beside each other. We can't be people that pass simply and wave and go on with our lives, never caring for one another. And so we've been thinking about this at the parish. And a couple of months ago, I read this article about how we are called to be more united with one another. And the article was written by a priest from another parish, not in this state or in this diocese, but another parish. I can't remember where it was. And he said his church began throwing pew parties. And it's not a party in your pew, so Mr. Barbieri, keep the wine locked, all right? But a pew party, a way to get to know one another. And it started with a family that had been at the parish for 40-plus years. And the parish was beginning to change, right? New people were moving in. There was lots of construction going on. And they looked one day at their pew, and they sat there and said, we don't know anybody anymore. All these people are new. Some young families, some middle-aged families, some older families. And so they came up with this idea of a pew party. And so the next week, they got to church with little invitations that were simply an invitation to come to brunch at their house after Mass to get to know each other. And so they passed them out to the people sitting in front of them and the people sitting in back of them and all the people in their pew. and they had their first pew party. And it worked fairly well. And so after a couple times, they went to their pastor and said, hey, we have this idea about having pew parties. And so that's how it started. So in our wisdom, we're kind of thinking out, well, what would pew parties look like at St. Lucy's? So take a deep breath, look to your right, to your left, and ask that question, do we really know everyone that sits around us? Do we know their names? Do we know what they do? Do we know where they're from? Hey? Hey, stand up. Stand up. You have 3 minutes to talk to people around you. They're in back of you, in front of you. Don't be afraid. No one will bite you, I promise. Yes, the choir can go out and they can go party in the pew.